Good Morning Pensacola. Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
Well, I'm on my way. I don't know where I'm going. I'm on my way. I'm taking my time, but I don't know where. Goodbye to Rose, the queen of Corona. See me and Julio down by the schoolyard.
Good morning, 1046 News Radio 92.3. Julio Diaz is our movie expert. He is the host of Let's Go Pensacola, 4 o'clock on Saturdays, and the host of the Pensacola Movie Club on Facebook. Follow them, listen, watch movies, talk about it afterwards. Julio, welcome back, sir.
Hey, good morning, Andrew.
Normal is the movie you watched?
Yeah, so I got to say, I've been a little skeptical about the whole reinvention of Bob Odenkirk as an action star.
Yeah.
Nobody, you know, it was fine. You know, it was, you know, it had the benefit of being, you know, the guys behind John Wick behind it and all
right.
That. I never did get around to seeing the sequel. But so this is another Bob Odenkirk action flick. It's called Normal. It's the name of a town in Minnesota where he has gone to be the interim sheriff because the previous sheriff has died. And they're like 8 weeks away from an election for a new sheriff. And this is what he does. He was a sheriff in a town, and now he goes around and fills in like these substitute sheriff positions around the country. And
okay.
There's reasons for that. So he goes to this town and discovers that this, you know, sleepy little mid-northwestern town is much more than it seems. And this movie was much more than it seemed for me too. I had a lot of fun with it. It was a cross between like some of the fun late 80s action flicks.
Okay.
Like, you know, not anything that's, you know, going to win an Academy Award or anything like that, but, you know, stuff that you used to watch on VHS growing up as a kid.
I gotcha. Okay.
But then it's got some of that like early to mid 90s indie sensibility, like kind of all the stuff that sprung up in the wake of Pulp Fiction. It's got, you know, a whole big cast of quirky characters, and it's you know, not afraid to be, you know, hyper violent but funny, and you know, it's I really enjoyed it.
All right, sounds entertaining enough to me. I'll give it a shot.
Touches on some current issues without
hitting you over the head
with them.
Okay.
And Henry Winkler is a villain, which is something you don't get to see very often either.
That's definitely not something you get. Never thought, it would be sinister. Lee Cronin's The Mummy?
Yeah. Do you know who Lee Cronin is?
Nope.
Neither does anybody else. So
perfect.
Why don't you get to have his name in front of the movie? This is something that really bugs me. I know they do it to
differentiate it.
Yeah, to differentiate it so they don't have to just put a parentheses with a year behind it in the IMDb listing.
Right.
But this is a guy that, like, you know, his previous directorial effort is the most recent, but there's another one coming out next week, the most recent Evil Dead movie. He's done a couple little things like that. He hasn't done anything that, like, you know, you don't see Steven Spielberg titling movies Steven Spielberg's Schindler's List.
You do see it with Tyler Martin Perry, maybe, but yeah, right. I get you.
It's not Martin Scorsese's Goodfellas, you know? I mean, you know, and people say that, but that's not the actual title of the movie. In this case, it is the actual title of the movie. This is another reinterpretation of the mummy mythos and getting not great reviews in the low 50s.
A documentary about SNL Lorne Michael.
I'm a major SNL geek, so I'm excited about this. This is from the same director who did 20 Steps from Stardom and Won't You Be My Neighbor, which are both excellent documentaries. If you haven't seen either of those, highly recommended. Won't You Be My Neighbor, of course, about Mr. Rogers, and then 20 Steps from Stardom is a famous documentary about backup singers.
Okay.
So this is about Lorne Michaels and, you know, everything. We all know who he is and what he's done. I'm a major SNL geek, so I'm excited about seeing this.
All right. Mile End Kicks.
This is a rom-com. It stars Barbie Ferreira, I believe is how you pronounce her name, set in Montreal. She's a young music critic who has moved up there to kind of find herself. And, of course, you know, it's rom-com, so you know where this one's going.
It's light and entertaining and a good date movie or something like that. And Busboy is last
80% is strange on that one, so good reviews.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that is good.
Yeah. Not screened for critics.
There you go.
Starring David Spade. Have I turned you off seeing this movie yet?
I like David Spade. I find him funny.
I like David Spade when he was on SNL. He hasn't done much worth seeing since then.
You're a David Spade snob. I never picked you for it, but okay. not screen for critics. David Spade, you know what you're going to get. What are you going to watch next week?
There's a couple of choices. I mentioned there's a new Evil Dead movie coming out next week. Another movie called Mother Mary. And then I Curse, which is a film that you might have heard a little bit about.
That's the Tourette Syndrome movie?
The actor. Yes. Finally coming out in the States, which this is kind of, you know, the lead actor won the BAFTA, so he's an actor you may see in the Oscar conversation at the end of this year.
All right, very good. 2 seconds. Do you ever quit a movie either in the theater or at home?
Very rarely. I have, but it's been some time since
you persist
out
of professional obligation, I figure. Okay.
Yeah.
We did that as a frivolous topic, and somebody wanted me to ask you that, so I'm asking. Julio Diaz, he is the host of Let's Go Pensacola, 4 o'clock tomorrow, and also the Pensacola Movie Club on Facebook. Follow them and watch movies. Julio, thanks for the time, sir. Talk to you next week.
All right, thanks, Andrew.
John Pickens has traffic on the fives.
That's right, rolling accident-free and also delay-free. I'm not seeing anything that's going to really slow you down. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
Hi, I'm Billy Anderson with Anderson Subaru in Pensacola. If you believe the destination is the journey, you'll love exploring in our new 2026 Subaru models, like the all-new 2026 Outback, strikingly redesigned with sharp lines and more edge, and now with financing as low as 3.9% for an amazing 75 months. Or how about the roomy Subaru Crosstrek or the family-sized Descent? Finance either one for 2.9% for 75 months. And the long-lasting and capable Subaru Forester. Drive one home for only 1.9% for 75 months. All come standard with Subaru's legendary symmetrical all-wheel drive to help you take on every journey with confidence. The all-new 2026 Subaru Outback and the 2026 Crosstrek, Ascent, and Forester. Love is out there. Find it in a Subaru from Anderson Subaru, Highway 29, just north of Car City, Pensacola. For details, call 877-554-9791.
Anderson's got a Subaru for you.
Greater Pensacola's leaders are in the tallest buildings and smallest shops, and they come together here to drive growth in innovation, to bridge industries, to share fresh ideas, and to understand how they can play a part in Greater Pensacola's success. The Greater Pensacola Chamber of Commerce. We believe local businesses are the cornerstone of a great community.
Tune in to Retire Right Radio, hosted by Roberts Wealth Management, Sundays at 1 with Paul Roberts. Find out how their certified advisors can help you enjoy your retirement income. Financial security is about more than investments. Roberts Wealth can help you live your values and trust your future planning every step of the way. Don't miss Retire Right Radio, hosted by Roberts Wealth Management, this Sunday at 1 p.m.
Investment advisory services offered by Foundations Investment Advisor Services, LLC, SEC. Registered advisors.
ADX Digital Lead, Brian Prowitz.
One of my favorite moments is when a business owner sees our ADX Digital Toolbox and they sit back in their chair and they have this look of surprise on their face and they say, I had no idea you guys did all of this. We have 19 ways to deliver your message to your specific audience inside your geographic footprint with reporting that proves its effectiveness, all for less than you might expect.
No one does digital like ADX Digital Marketing. ADXDigitalMarketing.com.
The five-day outlook is calling for intense flooding, followed by the end of the world!
You don't need panic. You need information. News Radio 92.3.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today for the Transgressors Memorial Service, remembering those who have transgressed against the great spirit of inclusion and must forever be cast into the abyss of dead names. Let's join Brother Andrew remembering those who we have lost.
Our first remembrance is for Democratic Congresswoman and California gubernatorial candidate Eric Swalwell, whom several women have accused of sexual misbehavior up to and including rape. Swalwell has denied all wrongdoing, but nevertheless has withdrawn from the governor's race and resigned from Congress because nothing says I'm innocent like quitting in the face of allegations. Well, I, for one, just want to say how great it is that 10 years after the hashtag MeToo movement began, it's still going strong enough to remove such a powerful man from office so quickly, assuming the allegations are true. And remember that as 65th wave feminists, we always assume all men are guilty of everything. This is yet another lesson to all members of the patriarchy. Your reputation, position, and power are all subject to rapid disintegration based on a few unproved salacious allegations. Remember, it doesn't matter whether any particular set of Me Too claims are true or not. It only matters that any man at any time can be targeted and brought down. All the better if he's actually guilty. But even if he's not, we relish using this power to scare the innocent into compliance, even if we also recognize that there really is no such thing as an innocent man. And for those of us who say, or those of you who say, it's not fair for all men to feel threatened in this way, just remember the core injustice we're undoing. Men have been unfairly hoarding power, privilege, and wealth from women for millennia. And if that scale becomes a little imbalanced in favor of women for a little while, that's not a problem. That's just the pendulum of fairness swinging back to the female side of the ledger. Even if we're all equal going forward, centuries of gender reparations are still due to women. And, you know, the fear of suffering false allegations and the sense of powerlessness that fosters would be a good thing for most men to experience because it would teach them how unpleasant it is to be an oppressed person, a lesson in humility they genuinely need. But even though we cheer the ouster of Swalwell, we should still keep in mind that this case specifically shows the inadequacy of both the legal system and major media, since once again the ouster was started and developed on social media based on one video interview with one victim. The patriarchy turned a blind eye until it couldn't ignore these women any longer. So although he is out, what have we learned? Well, meeting with a Chinese spy will not oust you from Congress. Having an unrepentant episode of on-screen flatulence will not oust you from Congress. And trying to run for president prematurely against Uncle Joe will not oust you from Congress. But having sexually inappropriate conversations, groping a thigh without consent, sending women unwanted willy pics, and getting them drunk or drugging them and raping them, or at least the allegations thereof, is plenty potent enough to oust you not only from Congress, but from becoming the next governor of California as well. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
Second, this week's three-stringed leer of justice with two Asahi tassels goes to the collective efforts of the 50 state bar associations to be more inclusive. As the Wall Street Journal reported, there have been dramatic improvements in the accommodations given to people who take the bar exam. California, for instance, allowed 14% of test takers to have more time to complete the exam due to disability, up from just 4% 10 years ago. In D.C., the numbers went from 5 to 15%, and Illinois jumped from 2 to 13%. The most common reasons for a time accommodation are attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, anxiety, and learning disabilities. And so the entire legal industry is now actively working to help slower, awkwarder, nervouser, and more easily distracted people become lawyers. Surely an ideal outcome. Even law firms are now pairing new hires with experienced attorneys in a sort of big attorney, big paralegal system called body doubling to help bridge the ability gaps of the incoming employees who are now having an easier time getting past the bar. After all, why shouldn't lawyers who think more slowly or get distracted or suffer anxiety have their day in court too, so to speak? A world of attorneys who need more time for everything sounds like a fine place. In fact, we wonder why there are even time limits at all. Bar exams without time limits would surely eliminate the unjust mental speed divide between participants, and if we're being serious about remedying the ability gaps and the bigotries that come from them, why not eliminate the bar entirely? Anyone who takes the bar is clearly serious about becoming a lawyer, and if someone is serious about practicing law, why should he be discouraged from that just because he isn't very good at memorizing, you know, legal principles and precedents? Some people have memory deficiency. Some people have an inability to focus. Some people feel such anxiety they can't speak effectively in public. Others may not be able to read well. And whose fault is that? Well, certainly not the student's fault. So we see a future where anyone who wants to become a lawyer gets to be a lawyer with no bar exam at all. It's the only fair and inclusive thing to do. But why stop at just lawyers? What about teachers? Are people to be prohibited from teaching just because they aren't good at school? It's not someone's abilities and objective performance that should determine their career path, but the trueness of their heart's desires. What about doctors and nurses? Why should someone be turned away from medicine just because she struggles to recall parts of the body, doesn't do well at categorizing symptoms, and can't remember which pharmaceuticals have which side effects? Who are we to tell people who have comprehension and memory issues that they can't be doctors or nurses too? Surely, if persons with autism, anxiety, or ADHD can become lawyers, why not teachers and doctors and virtually anything else as well? Competency testing is so fundamentally ableist that we're surprised it's been in practice this long. Who wouldn't want to be operated on by an alternatively abled surgeon who can't identify internal organs under stress and can't make decisions in an emergency due to crippling anxiety? So kudos to you, bar associations and law firms all over the land, for literally lowering the bar for everyone. As Guy is my witness, it's about time we move towards the standards and competency-free utopia our principles of wokeness say we all deserve. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
Finally, as a result of the great work being done with the bar exam, our holy wokest thought leaders have instructed us to start working on an exciting new project. A second holy acronym string. As all of you know, our order is committed to several holy paradoxes, the fourth of which is the confounding pair of beliefs that people who are alternately abled are so much less capable of doing things that they must be helped or accommodated in order to bring them even with the traditionally abled, and yet at the same time that their alternative abilities are in no way any lesser than those whom we classify as traditionally abled. Critics say it is illogical to hold both views, but we say love knows no bounds, not even those of logic. And as a way of formally honoring those with alternative ability styles, what some people call disabilities, the Third Interlateran Conclave on Ecumenical Ecumenism has decided that we should begin offering full inclusion and recognition to people with non-standard abilities, just as we already do in solidarity with people of non-standard lifestyles and genders. Obviously, the list of identified conditions will include attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, ADHD, autism spectrum disorder, ASD, behavioral disorders, BD, including oppositional defiant disorder, ODD, and conduct disorder, CD. There is fetal alcohol syndrome disorder, FASD, physical neurological disabilities, PND, such as cerebral palsy, CP, epilepsy, E, Down syndrome, DS, and Tourette syndrome, TS. There are perceptual disabilities, such as speech, hearing, and visual impairments, SI, HI, and VI, respectively. And of course, there are intellectual disabilities, such as dyslexia for reading, dyscalculia for math, and dysgraphia for writing, DDDD, or what I like to call the old quadruple D. People of low IQ are currently being represented by the abbreviation IQ-, which you might think they would find insulting, but they don't understand, so it's fine. There was some conversation around anti-science bias disorder, ASBD, for people raised in religious households, particularly those who were homeschooled, but nobody wanted to offer help to the Christians for obvious reasons. So a proposed early option we have is to now refer to all of our sister and other and brethren who struggle with alternative abilities by the now preliminarily approved second holy acronym string. ADHD, ASD, BD, ODD, CD, FASD, PND, CPEDS, TS, SI, HI, VI, DD, DD, and IQ minus persons. It will probably take a little getting used to, but as we always say, justice isn't easy. If it were, everyone would do it. So in order to kick off our disability inclusion efforts, we're hosting a special workshop Tuesday here at the 7th, 1st, 15th Holy Spiritual Center of Glorious Equality Reformed. Over in Personship Hall, we will be hosting our inaugural Disability Expo, helping you answer the key questions, do I have a disability, and am I entitled to accommodation? There will be tutorials to teach you all the latest and greatest disabilities, both to self-diagnose and to find in others. Even if you think you don't have a disability, you're still encouraged to attend for awareness and for discovering whether perhaps you do have disability deficit disability, a condition which is surprisingly common in people who think they have no disability at all. We will, of course, be singing the most recent hit song from the pop justice supergroup, We Are the People. You know how it goes. Everyone's disabled. Everyone is born with disability. Don't worry if you don't know it. We recognize memory and musical disabilities as well. So we'll see you all on Tuesday or whenever you happen to show up. We know time blindness is a real disability, too. Woe unto all who offend.
Woe unto all who offend.
And now, brethren, sistren, and otheren, having been cleansed of these hurtful words, give each other the holy virtue signal and go forth and transgress no more.
We're all going to have to memorize a whole new string of letters.
I can't do it.
By the way,
I'm
real
having
story,
a hard time.
And it turned part of the key about the WSJ story that I didn't get into is that it's privileged wealthy parents are abusing the system of accommodation to pay for basically testing and certification for their kids to get easier access to schools and other privileges. And it's the poor kids who aren't able to handle paying for the testing. So their rate of identification of disability requiring accommodation is like 3%, whereas the wealthy kids is like 30%. This system is completely upside down. Anyway, John Pickens has traffic for you. John?
Just one accident on Davis Highway and University Parkway. We're seeing some roadblock associated with that on Davis, so just be aware.
All right. Thanks so much, David. David Wayne, no time. It would be wrong of me to go to him. We have the wrap coming up. We've got Kim Klein and Jeremy Evans here in studio, and we'll be talking about all kinds of things, including the Bay Center. Stick around for that.
Fox News, I'm Therese Crowley. Leaving Las Vegas, President Trump talking about people's tax refunds 11% higher.
The biggest tax refunds of their entire lives, and you see it. And I just want to say you're welcome. You're welcome.
Making the economy boom, says the president. On to Arizona for a message of optimism at a Turning Point USA event. The president also optimistic that Iran is willing to make a peace deal now. And today, Iran's foreign minister says in line with the Israel-Lebanon ceasefire, all commercial vessels can pass through the Strait of Hormuz. Markets soaring. Overnight, the House passed a two-week extension to the FISA Surveillance Act. House Speaker Mike Johnson buying time to negotiate.
We'll get there. A few more days will give us the time to do it, and we'll keep Americans safe.
20 Republicans balked at continuing warrantless surveillance of foreign nationals and Americans they interact with. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning. It's 8:31 at News Radio 92.3. I'm David Wayne, 62. We've got clear skies right now, and we'll get to a full forecast here in just a few minutes. Well, Escambia County Commissioner Mike Kohler facing a traffic citation. This is after his truck rolled into a power pole in Sanders Beach while he was out canvassing the area for re-election. Kohler speaking to Andrew McKay in News Radio just a few moments ago explaining what happened.
So I was looking at my walk list. And I had my foot on my brake. Someone came by and hit their horn, right? I looked over, and I think it was a supporter. And I thought, wait a minute, Charles is down the road. I looked out. I couldn't see him. I opened up my door, and I got out, forgetting to put my car in park. The car rolled forward a few feet, hit the pole. A spark went from the thing. That's all that happened.
And Kohler said the fire department was on scene and says there was no fire. A homeowner and tenant claim the power surge resulting from that, though, caused thousands of dollars of damage in a nearby home. Pensacola police have charged Kohler with leaving a vehicle unattended. Pensacola and Escambia County sat down together on Thursday for a big joint session to talk about the future of the Pensacola Bay Center. For the first time in a long time, both of those bodies left the room pointed in the same direction. Their consensus: renovate the Bay Center, build a second Flex event center next door, and keep talking about that second sheet of ice through a public-private partnership. County Commission Chair Ashley Hoffberger set the tone at the beginning of the meeting.
This is a huge community project and a once-in-a-lifetime project for all of us, and it's rare we get the opportunities to invest such a major amount of money into something that could change our entire community for the better and that we'll all be able to see the benefits of.
And County Administrator Wes Moreno will be working with City Administrator David Stafford to put together some joint framework, which they'll bring back to both bodies likely by June. The county's tourist development tax bonding capacity also now confirmed it closer to $150 million, enough to fund both the Bay Center renovation and the second event center. The Molino Park Elementary School PTA Spring Carnival is happening today. There will be multiple food trucks, local vendors, live and silent auctions, and some other activities for kids and adults. That starts at 5:30 tonight at the school on Highway 97. In Mississippi, a man is dead after being shot by deputies outside of the Jackson County Courthouse in Pascagoula yesterday. Investigators say the man drove his vehicle through a fence near the courthouse, parked next to a large propane tank, and allegedly tried to ignite propane tanks he had in his vehicle in an apparent attempt to cause a large explosion. When officers arrived, he led them on a foot chase before an exchange of gunfire. No officers or bystanders were injured, and the FBI and ATF are all assisting in this investigation. The suspect's identity has so far not been released. It's 8:35 at News Radio 92.3. Let's check in with John Pickens, who's got our traffic on the fives.
Brought to you by Frontier Motors, the only dealer Dave Ramsey recommends in Pensacola. That's Frontier Motors on Beverly Parkway. Just one accident on the big board right now, North Davis Highway and University Parkway. And if you're coming southbound on Davis right around University, traffic is starting to back up due to that accident. Expect about a 15, 17-minute delay in that area. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
We are going to be looking at some lovely weather today with mostly sunny skies. Temperatures warming up today near 81 degrees. Overnight tonight, temperatures dropping near 64. For Saturday, partly sunny skies, high near 82. Saturday night, temperatures dropping near 60 degrees. For Sunday morning, 50% chance of some showers with some heavy pockets possible. Saturday afternoon, highs near 75 degrees. And Saturday night, temperatures dropping near 52. Stay connected, Channel 3 News First Warning Weather Team. Download the WEAR-TV weather app. This is Brooke Richardson from the First Warning Weather Center.
Thank you very much, Brooke. Sunshine, we've got 73 degrees right now on this Friday morning. And your money now. Well, markets are up today. The Dow's up 1.5%, 49,264.36. S&P is up about 0.8% at 7,097.08. The NASDAQ up just under 1% at 24,340.41. 10-year bond rate today down at 4.24%. Gold prices are up 75.90, 4,884.20. Silver is up 3.13 at 81.84. And looking at that oil price, it is down a bit, 11% actually, at 83.87 a barrel today. And Bitcoin is up 1,300 at 76,588.60 this morning. A travel alert for anybody flying Spirit. The airline could shut down for good as early as this week. Reports indicate Spirit is on the brink of total liquidation as its bankruptcy restructuring hits a wall. The culprit? Sky-high fuel costs fueled by the conflict in the Middle East. Lenders are reportedly pulling support, and the airline is already cutting dozens of routes and furloughing hundreds of crew members. Now, the parent company of home shopping TV channels QVC and HSN has filed for bankruptcy.
You are getting a $128 QVC price for $79.
QVC now. Group revealed the plan in filing with the SEC. This comes as consumer habits have shifted, with video platforms on Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube entering the shopping space. QVC Group laid off 900 employees last year as it planned to shift to social platforms. The company said its aim is to emerge from bankruptcy within 90 days. I'm Michael Kastner.
AI may be controversial, but it's also popular among U.S. shoppers. Adobe says AI traffic to the websites of U.S. retailers is up year over year by 269%. The company says 39% of shoppers now report using AI to help make purchases. And Netflix chairman and co-founder Reed Hastings is stepping down this summer after 29 years. In that time, it went from a service that physically mailed out DVDs to the largest paid streaming service in the world with an audience of nearly 1 billion people. The company said Hastings is planning to step away to focus on philanthropy. It's 8:38. Our next news at 9. Breaking news anytime. I'm David Wayne for News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
You don't always have time to sit and listen. That's why Pensacola Right Now works the way it does. Every few minutes, you get the latest local news, traffic on the fives, weather, and updates you actually need. So whether you're in the car for 5 minutes or 50, you're always caught up. Pensacola Right Now with Chris and Austin. Weekdays 4 to 7 on News Radio 92.3, 95.3, and AM 1620.
News Radio 92.3.
Informative, local, dependable.
Hey, if you're looking for that next restaurant to try reservoir. It's very, very good. It's basically like fine casual. It's kind of got the ambiance of an upscale coffee shop, but the food is fantastic. It's started by Casey Jones and his wife, City Councilman Casey Jones and his wife. They renovated the old Milano Brothers corner store that's right across from PPD and the skate park downtown on Haines Street. And it's just kind of all sorts of stuff. Breakfast, lunch, dinner, Saturday brunch, sandwiches, burgers, ponzu crunch, Cuban, shrimp and grits, oysters, filet, scallops. So like a whole range of, you know, affordable to upscale stuff. Their one thing that I think is my most personal interesting one is the Kaneka Reka, which is a sausage and biscuits with Kaneka sausage. Oh, yeah. Handcrafted coffee, tea, local Big Jerk sodas, beer on tap, just all kinds of different things. Great place to stop by. Voted best new restaurant in Pensacola's Inn Weekly. That's Reservoir, right at the corner of Hayne and Jackson.
Everybody jump! Jump, 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 jump! I said a hip, hop, the hip, 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 hop, you don't stop. Rap, rap.
I will definitely call you back later, then.
Come on, wrap it up.
Big circle.
Okay, you know what? Wrap up the circle thing. Come on.
Mr. Parker, wrap it up, please.
Okay.
Okay, everybody, that's a wrap.
That's a wrap. It's an opportunity for me to talk with a couple of friends here in studio. Longtime friend Jeremy Evans is here with us, as he is once a month, and somewhat longtime friend, but also somebody I love just hanging out with her. And she at least used to teach government and debate, right, also
I
at
did.
Gulf Breeze
I
High
did.
School?
Yes.
And our dear friend Blake Barkley, he was one of your students.
He was.
And she ran for state representative as a no-party affiliation, right,
correct.
Last time around against
correct.
Alex Andrade. Kim Klein is here. Kim, welcome back.
Thank you.
And you actually keyed in on a part of the Transgressive Memorial Service that you wanted to follow up with because you have experience with this as a teacher. I kind of told the story briefly. Wall Street Journal had a really good article about how they're accommodating people with disabilities or claimed disabilities for the bar exam, giving them extra time. And then the story also went on to say that what you're seeing is that high-end or affluent high school students are getting identified as having disabilities that require accommodation at a rate of like 30%, whereas, you know, lower income, so-called right. inner city schools, the accommodation identification rate is more like 3%, which you think that's likely backwards. If anything, it'd be a higher rate for the, you know, underprivileged youth and a lower rate for the affluent. But it's because their wealthy parents are able to hire the people to go do the testing to certify they have the accommodation so they can get the benefit. It's a crazy system. And you were sitting there going, amen, that really happens, right?
Yeah, yeah. It was absolutely, when I taught, it was something that I noticed too. So I taught an affluent school district, and I don't in any way want to talk down legitimate accommodations because they are necessary. I'll also add that I think that, you know, attention issues are real now, that the kids do have a shorter attention span than they did 15 years ago. But when it comes to things like scholarship money, you look at some of the more affluent schools and they have the largest amount of scholarship dollars that actually go in there. And when you kind of pick it apart, it is sort of a racket because people have realized this is all kind of based on Florida on the Bright Future Scholarship. So the Bright Future Scholarship, for those of you who are not aware, it's funded by the lottery. And for those of us who voted for the lottery way back when it started, you know, that was my catalyst for voting for it because that money was going to be going towards higher education. But what we see happening,
which in Florida means you either get 75% or 100% of your tuition. It's already a very low tuition for Florida, but
right.
this makes it free for an awful lot of students.
Right. Yeah. So there's real money on the line.
Yeah.
I mean, 100% of your tuition is a big deal. And so I have to check what the exact qualifications are now, but I know that one of them is a 29 on the ACT. You have to have a 3.5 GPA.
Yeah. And we have kids going, we're dealing with this right now. That's,
right.
I mean, 29 is a fairly
it's high.
Big
it's very high.
Yeah.
And so most kids without extra tutoring are going to have a hard time getting that. But if you can invest $500 or $1,000 over the course of your kids being able to practice to take the test with private tutors, whether that also goes for AP exams, you know, investing that money up front to be able to get, you know, $20,000 a year or more access to scholarship money. Because also once you get the Bright Future Scholarship, then you kind of are opened up to other scholarship money.
Right. And you can get paid to go to school. Right.
Right. And then the accommodations fall into that too, that some parents actually getting accommodations for their students to get IEPs or 504s specifically so they can get extra time on the test to give them an advantage. And really for a kid who comes in and their parents maybe didn't go to college and they don't know about this racket They don't know that this is how you have to navigate it. They're at a real disadvantage for getting access to the funds that were designed to help them the most.
Right. Yeah. You know? It completely inverts the original purpose
exactly.
of, you know, kind of equalizing or, you know, making the tables fair or whatever. Jeremy, you know, your wife's in education. You're pretty close to a lot of this stuff. You're not a teacher. But, you know,
yeah.
You're not,
I mean, but. I think it is a... It's complicated. I know that many universities tried to go away from using standardized tests and admissions because they thought they were culturally biased or for the reasons that we're talking about, and it lasted about a year or two before they realized we need to go back to this program. And what's the solution?
Right.
Like, what is, like,
if,
like
if
what,
kids, as Kim says, are really have, for example, anxiety and attention issues, is the solution to that to just say, well, you know, tough, you don't get to be a lawyer, this tends to be my answer, which is you need standards, you need competency. You know, you're not in the courtroom going to have the opportunity to just, hey, I'm feeling anxious right now. Can we take a break? You know, it doesn't work that way. Well, so,
and the kids that are going above and beyond aren't getting the opportunity to stand out either. Do you know what I mean?
Right,
the kids
right.
who don't.
Because
who
other
don't,
people are, because of the wealth issue, they're
exactly.
sucking it up. Go ahead.
I see that, but I think, like, you're talking about raised test scores. That's because the carrot of this scholarship is lifting the boat.
Right.
Like, it is making it more challenging for students because more of them being successful, we need to, how do we whittle it? We got to raise the test scores.
Right.
And so...
And limited resources. I mean, you only have so much
money.
You only
have so much money, and
right.
so you kind of have to raise test scores. And I don't think that... I don't think that Florida and Florida State, like, I think tuitions have been relatively the same for 10, 15
right.
years. So it's not like the money that's having to go to pay for students has inflated a ton.
Right.
It's more students are qualifying for the scholarship, and so we have to raise the level because students are getting better. And so I think at some level, you have to say, okay, yes, we are creating problems, but we're also creating those problems because of success.
Because it's working. And I think, of course, Kim, I think, is primarily not objecting to just the idea of raising the test scores. It's the way that system gets taken advantage of by the people who need it the least and should be able to not have to take advantage of it. Yeah, and so agreed. But yeah, I mean, and also this kind of growing awareness that the college education itself is not really for everybody and shouldn't be for everybody, that, you know, there's a lot of opportunity, even better opportunity a lot of times in trade schools, vocational work, all that kind of stuff.
My wife is a college professor, college administrator, all the things. I love the entire Florida higher education system. Everybody who is capable should have the opportunity to go to college. Not everybody needs to go to college, and
right.
we need to be building up our trade schools, our career, you know, the apprenticeships, the things that used to exist. If I have an 11-year-old daughter, if she came home to me and said, Dad, I want to be an auto mechanic, I think my heart would sing, or an AC mechanic or
right,
something
right,
like
right.
that, because you're walking into a six-figure job once you figure out the stuff, and then your ability to open your own business and do all of the things is tremendous.
Right.
And you have to take away this idea that college is better.
Yeah,
that,
right.
that a bachelor's
yes.
degree is better
or that
than,
it's right
say, a certification.
For all.
Correct.
Yes.
Because it really, when you think about the jobs that are most secure locally, it's the jobs that can't be outsourced, the jobs that can't necessarily be taken over by AI.
Right.
A lot of that has to do with stuff that is, like you said, the plumbers, the electricians, the local contractors, the AC repair folks, things like that you have to call someone and you need a physical person there. And that type of labor is continually in demand, which is driving up the cost that you know, the amount of money that they can make. So yeah, it's just got to be a conversation where people are considering all opportunities for employment.
No, complete. And as somebody who taught college, I love university, but it's not for everybody, and it shouldn't
right.
be for everybody. And that's been
absolutely.
A mistake in kind of, you know, everybody's supposed to go there as their solution. I mean, I have three kids. One's a mechanical engineer. One's going to be a cop, and one's going to be a nurse.
Yeah.
You know, that's just, and that's great. That's the whole point, is everybody's got different skills and abilities. John Pickens has traffic on the fives. John?
That's right. We're still working that accident on Davis Highway and University Parkway. It's off to the side of the road, and traffic is flowing again on Davis Highway, so I just wanted you to be aware of that. I-10, I-110, everything else is flowing smoothly. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the 5.
Thanks so much, John. We got two things to cover. I don't know which one you want to do first. You want to do Bay Center first? Because that was yesterday. I haven't really covered this in because I haven't gone back and cut the audio, which I will for Monday, because it was an interesting conversation. Surprisingly collegial, and I thought surprisingly consensus. You know, in fact, one of the weirdest parts was that Lumen May, the guy whose whole life is in sports and sports tourism, winds up being the only guy in that room who was really arguing against the sports facility, which I thought was super bizarre. But okay, you watched some of this meeting or all this meeting,
yeah,
Jeremy?
Yeah, and I have been pretty firm in my belief that we are going to be fighting an uphill battle to get the sports tourism. When you look at what happens in Foley, you look at what happens in Destin, what they've already built up, they're on the beach, they have a ton of infrastructure, ton of hotels, ton of all of that kind of stuff, that I think you're going to be fighting uphill for a lot of the sports tourism. I think if they're going very, very targeted basketball, cheerleading, those kind of things, which I think they're talking about, maybe there's space for that. But the idea, like this sports tourism drive that's been happening for 10, 15 years, I think a lot of that is wishful thinking because of the infrastructure, like OWA. You know, how much money did they invest in building up their facilities, and they're so close to the beach, and they have, you know, the tribe money, those kind of things to invest over there. I think you're not, when people already have a cornerstone on some of the market, it's not that you're going into an open playing field. You're having to take business away from other places, and I think that might be a struggle with us with the infrastructure that we have in downtown, where there's not a ton of hotels, there's not a lot of competition for that money that you have in some of those other places for a family that's trying to figure out how are they going to get to the weekend whatever tournament.
And I thought, like, there were a lot of the points that came up yesterday that I thought were quite relevant. For example, the sports tourism family is – they're not going out to the fine restaurants. They're, you know, they're going out to fast food. They don't want the nice hotel. They want the affordable hotel. They need parking. We don't have a lot of parking. Like, all the things that would fit for the periphery around an athletic facility would honestly be better suited for someplace like OLF 8 in a lot of ways. That would be perfect for that kind of a thing in a sort of a comprehensive approach. Whereas a convention center is a perfect fit for downtown, high-end hotel, perfect fit for around that. But they seem to be so much in consensus going the other way that, I mean, I was willing to, you know, it's what Visit's been saying for forever is the convention center. I was happy to see consensus. It may be the wrong thing in the wrong place. It's not quite as much as putting the wrong thing at Ashton Brosnahan Park like that was. But I don't know, Kim, your thoughts about all this?
Yeah, so I read the overview of it. So one of the things that struck me was that it seemed, again, like you said, the general consensus among the commissioners, but also the county and the city, because it was going back and forth of reading that, and it doesn't seem to be the tension that's normally there between the county and the city on what to do. What I was interested in is, you know, the Ice Flyers portion, which it seems like the ice rink is not.
Yeah, they definitely sidelined the ice rink and said Greg Harris, the Ice Flyers owner, can basically, he can work on that. We're here to help if
they
need
to. Because they make money, correct?
Ice Flyers makes money?
Yeah, do they? I mean,
I believe so. Yeah. I'm pretty sure, yeah. And, you know, it's good for the Bay Center.
Right.
And one of the things about ice time is part of the issue. And obviously, if you have a rink, a second rink, then they can take the practice time out of the Bay Center. That frees up the Bay Center for more lucrative, because practice time doesn't make you money.
Right.
But it can be other events. A similar thing for if you have an athletic facility that's outside the Bay Center. Now you can book concerts in the revamped venue as well. You can raise the profit profile for the Bay Center by handling these things in a different facility that doesn't need everything the Bay Center contains. I mean, all the pieces make sense to
Right.
But I'm with you, Jeremy. The location one, and then the parking, which is going to be the $43,000 of space we learned from Florida West, you know, their recent expansion. It's not going to be cheap to build any kind of a parking structure.
Right.
And then I am also firmly of the belief that the Bay Center really can't move forward in any real way until they figure out what's going on with the Grand Hotel.
I want to believe that's not true, but I know that that's such a huge piece of the puzzle. And it's frustrating that they're like the black hole of information, that the Grand Hotel, nobody seems to know, even when the mayor or the commissioners talk to them and nothing materializes, they ask for this subsidy. I mean, dude, you're in the perfect place to be solving these problems and you won't participate.
So it also, just for clarification, on the idea that they're talking about with the convention center, at one point, it was putting a hotel in conjunction with the center as well. Correct?
Yes,
that's been sidelined.
Everybody seems to agree you can do the small convention during the week and the athletic stuff on the weekend in an athletic facility or a hybrid facility. Mm-hmm. But if you're doing conventions and trying to go for the big, expensive, nice conventions that we cannot accommodate right now, you need to have a dedicated convention space with a certain level of, you know, spend on the appearance of it.
Yeah.
And you have to have a big hotel. You have to have a hotel that can handle those people and the ballroom facility that, those conventions would need. And so you need the hotel with the convention space. You can do the athletic thing without the hotel, or at least without it so much so at the moment. Is like how I read it. Jeremy saying?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And I think that if it's, if you're going to invest or be on the hook for $150 to $200 million, which is what they're talking about, you have to dot every I. You have to cross every T. You need to have every tool in your toolbox available. And I don't see that being an option if you have this grand hotel that's just sitting there that is mostly operational.
Yeah.
But insurance money from Hurricane, I mean, that's right. The last that I heard was that there's insurance fighting going on to fix some things. And I don't know.
Somebody knows, but, you know, it's not in the public, not very much. We have Kim Klein and Jeremy Evans here for The Wrap. John Pickens has traffic on the fives.
That's right. We're back to rolling accident-free right now, even delay-free. Not seeing anything that's going to slow you down. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
Thanks so much, John. All right. The Pope, J.D. Vance, Donald Trump, AI, Dr. Jesus Trump, and all of the stuff. You know me, I have strong opinions about Trump. Who doesn't? I give him a pass, but I know that Trump is not he doesn't speak the language of Christian culture. And so he didn't understand why this would be offensive. It's just not his, you know, he talks about going to 2 Corinthians. That's him. He's not immersed in that culture. And so he's going to say ridiculous things. But it's now kind of become, the Pope is against you on the war. The Pope's not attacking him on this particularly, but, you know, that made a lot of people raise their eyebrows. I think, finally, you know, what are you doing? But how does this play? Obviously, Trump can't get reelected, so it's not an issue there, but midterms are coming real soon, right? We're, 3 months from primaries, four months from primaries?
I think that you're going to see a highly motivated Democratic base, a liberal base that's going to turn out in midterm elections. And I think the true red MAGA base is going to turn out. But that one third of Americans that kind of are moderately Democrat, moderately Republican,
Kleins of America.
Do they turn out? And then what do we see?
Right.
So I just read a poll. So Florida has roughly 25% of NPA voters that are leaning heavily Democratic in polling right now when they're looking at the governor's race coming up. So that's one of the things that, you know, I don't necessarily buy the naivete of that Trump wasn't quite sure what he was saying. I feel like you're either a mastermind or you're a rube. Yeah. And you can't play both cards all the time. But you sure can.
what do you think happens all the
time? I feel like maybe it might be more calculated because, you know, when you throw these political these social media grenades out there and you get everybody talking about this and the relationship between the Pope and that, then they're not necessarily talking about the economy and they're not necessarily talking about the war.
Sure.
And so to me, but
although with the Pope definitely talking about the war and just war and all that, but
all popes attack, you know what I mean? They're all going to go. They're Christians. I mean, that's their role. I don't think it's a great idea to go head to head over theology, you know, the semantics of theology with the Pope. Like I'm not Catholic, but I wouldn't do that.
See, I'm a Protestant. I have on the radio, and I don't think Trump thinks anything is off limits for him to, you know, to fight with because that's what he does.
I personally think that the Trump versus Catholics is not irrelevant, but minor. But Trump versus like Protestant
evangelicals, right.
Yeah.
And you're posting a picture of yourself as Jesus
in
the vein.
Well,
do you start to turn off those people who somehow excused the,
but they didn't care about the Bible, the gold Trump Bible or whatever. They don't care. You know, it's like when I thought the abortion comment, you know, when he said DeSantis was, you know, too pro-life, and I'm like, what? Dude, didn't hurt him at all. Not really. We talked about that at the time.
And I think there's a point where it is, you combine that with $4 gas.
Yeah.
You combine that with, you told us bananas and eggs were going to be cheaper. You combine that with all the other things. And I think the people who thought he was the better way, maybe they change their mind, maybe they don't. And I think you see Republican candidates around the country. Look at, there are serious people running for governor against Byron Donalds, who's been anointed by Trump, and they're not afraid of that.
Right.
And I think that is kind of telling that these people, they're not falling away.
They see
away.
Opportunity, right.
They're not falling away. If anything, they're gaining traction and getting more into a race. And I find it to be very interesting what polling's telling people.
Well, and it's going to be very difficult for them. I mean, going in, that's the whole other thing about the sort of the distraction is that it hurts every Republican that's running for re-election because they're not talking about issues that maybe they have possible policy solutions for. They're having to talk about issues defending something that they had no control over.
How many times when I interview Jimmy Petronas is he, because I'm asking, but other people do too, is he forced to respond to whatever latest Trump thing as opposed to whatever Congress is actually doing? And now that's part his fault because he leaned on that, but that's the dilemma for most of your Republicans. Thanks
like
so much.
You suggested
local news every hour and breaking news when it matters most.